it's time for Truth About Markets with Max and Stacy, coming to you live, not live, but recording here in Athens, Syngenta Square, where all the action was last night, Stacy.
Yes, we're recording this early because we were in Athens for the big protests and riots you might have seen. And as you can hear, all the music and loud noises around us, this is day two, I guess, or day 22 or whatever, depending on where you start counting. But there are lots of tents in St. Thomas Square, or Constitution Square, I think it's called in English. And there are just thousands of people here, and it's a party atmosphere, lots of tents, people living here. They're camped out for the long haul.
Yep, we got one of these camp-out situations, people living in the square, trying to reformulate some kind of society in the wake of the IMF destruction. Now, I thought it was very interesting. You know, when we arrived yesterday, I went into the wrong hotel, and I saw Steve Forbes in the lobby of the hotel, and it turns out he's here fronting a group from the International Chamber of Commerce, and the agenda on the group's meetings are to survey and to check out the various properties and assets here in Greece that are going to be put on the chopping block, put on the auction block, as part of the austerity measures and part of the recapitalization, you could say, of Greece. And last night, during the incredible melee, during the incredible assault here in the square, where we were being, our hotel was being pelted with bricks. You know, these guys are next door. They didn't have a care in the world, really. It's nothing to them. I mean, they were just a few feet away from the folks that they're going to be completely disenfranchising. Today, they had their black-windowed buses lined up to take them around to visit the assets that they're going to acquire for pennies on the dollar. So Steve Forbes is kind of on the front line of the leverage buyout shock troops. We're on the front line of the reporting troops.
Yeah, but Max, also remember that the Chamber of Commerce, they are very behind the Tea Party. So this is what the Tea Party wants. This is the Tea Party. Many of the Tea Party people would be up there in that hotel in the Grand Breton with Steve Forbes, buying up assets and throwing things back at the protesters, because ultimately it is the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the Koch brothers. They finance a lot of the Tea Party events, and the Tea Party loves the Chamber of Commerce because they provide a lot of the research and data that proves their points.
Yeah, well, it's hard to sort through the threads of the manifesto to understand what the Tea Party is all about. I mean, it seems like a regional group, a very...
Yeah, but that's what I'm talking about. It's the global insurrection against banker occupation. So when you look for alliances between the people in Ireland and the people in Iceland and the people in Greece, and then you look over to America and you say, where in America is there some sort of allied group? And the Tea Party pretends to be this, like, revolutionary group, but in fact, it's an oligarchy group.
Yeah, their platform, all politics in America boils down to having the same platform, which is keeping the price of gas cheap. That's pretty much what all the political parties represent, except for Ralph Nader and maybe Ron Paul. But outside of Ralph Nader and Ron Paul, it's the let's keep the price of gas cheap party. And they're not doing a good job with that, because folks like the International Chamber of Commerce are out here blowing through billions in debt, which is having the effect of causing high inflation all around the world and rising the cost of gas. So if the Tea Party had a brain in their head, they would be taking a different approach. But of course, since that's not the case, and they have as their representative people who have clearly been lobotomized, they're shooting themselves in the head. This is why they're so adamant about gun rights, is because they want the right to shoot themselves in the head.
Well, I mean, David DeGraw from AmpStatus.org also tried some sort of rebellion on June 14th when he, the Empire State Rebellion. But apparently, there were 23 states held protests, and an average of, I think, 14 people showed up. So, as you can see, it certainly hasn't spread to the U.S. yet. resistance against banker occupation. All you have are rallies for banker occupation, and that's what I'm saying is the Tea Parties were. So
yeah, and you also have, you know, protests in places like Madison, Wisconsin, but those protests are quickly characterized as socialist and communist. And so they're marginalized, and nobody understands that they're part and parcel of the global threads all converging to take on the banksters.
That's right. And I just want to note here in St. Thomas Square, there is somebody who, as soon as I saw him, I thought of Richard from Resonance. The man, do you call it a solitary protest or solitary artwork? He's art and protest. He's a guy who's... oh, he looks about late 70s, early 80s, and he's just standing there with his arms raised in the air. And I think of Resonance. He's like, he's the real world equivalent of much of the music on this channel.
Well, he's in silent protest, basically, and he has his arms up, outreached. He's in a minor stress position. To keep your arms out there outstretched for hours on end is actually not that difficult, and for an old man, it has a natural tendency for your eye to gravitate toward that because, you know, he's put himself in a bit of a stressful position, and it's he won't be around to see the ultimate destruction of the country because he's getting on in years. So this is his last view of his beloved country, is it's being completely picked apart by banksters for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, so, Max Kaiser, what is your impression of Athens? How do you compare it to Dublin? Because we were... here are two people getting in fight, some old man in an argument with a younger guy, and... you notice a lot of yelling around in this town, don't you notice that?
Well, there's a lot of, even with this big square riot last night and the tear gas and the coverage, it's still not really being covered in the mainstream media here in Greece in a big way because of the fact that this place, Greece, is still, you know, they're trying to protect their image as a tourist destination, so they're frightened of putting images, too many images of people getting beaten up on the streets. You know, as it is, this morning, the day after the riots, the tourists showed up en masse. And last night, it's interesting because our hotel was a war zone. The doors were blockaded. You had the vending machines, the Coke machines were stacked up inside the hotel as a buttress against the anarchists that were throwing rocks, breaking windows. In our room upstairs, you could hear the waves of rock pelting, hitting the walls, and blowing bits of marble and rock from the walls and upon impact. And they were getting closer to our windows. They didn't shatter our windows, they shattered other windows. We went up to the seventh floor. And up on the seventh floor, people who, this is a pretty swank hotel, they were dining peacefully on Chateaubriand and sipping some pretty expensive wine. So it was kind of like some of the scenes in the Apocalypse Now where Willard is going through the jungle and he haps upon a French plantation estate. And they're living in, you know, the 1950s splendor. And then he leaves them and goes back into the mud of the jungle facing the insurgency. And so we found this right here in the hotel on the seventh floor. It was business as usual. The elites dining on little carcasses of game bird. While on the street, we had baklava wearing anarchists throwing Molotov cocktails and tear gas.
Baklava? That's the Greek pastry.
That's what they do in Greece. They wear the baklava on their face. And afterward, they lick each other's face.
Well, two things I want to note there as well is we had a friend who, you know, the journalist, a radio host from New York, who's also Greek. He has coveringdelta.wordpress.com. And he was outside our hotel watching it. And he said he had never seen anything like that. He said it really looked like a military attack, like it was a literal attack on the hotel. Now, we were at this hotel because we're making this film, Hotspots Greece, and, you know, I'm pretty much like two-thirds of the way there on the edit. And I said to Max, you know, it would be really, well, we were invited here. Max was invited here by a group of lawyers, and he spoke to them last night. They're building a criminal case against the government and the banks. And so Max is invited to speak there. And when we were deciding whether to come, I said, you know what, maybe it would be nice to actually check into one of those hotels for a night just so I could get an above head, you know, an overhead shot, because I don't have that from the previous footage when we were down on the ground. And it was really hard in the footage to show just the size of how many people were there. So I really wanted an overhead shot to get for this film. So lo and behold, I did say to Max, look, this hotel is normally 800 euros a night, and it's going for a fraction of that. Why don't we stay there? Little did we know that it was because it was some sort of war zone.
Yeah, we got some great views, certainly, from this particular vantage point. And I poked my head out at one point during the heat of the battle, and our friend said he saw me from the street. And he was a bit concerned that I would get hit in the head or something, that because you become an immediate target, and the little terrace outside of the window quickly filled up with juice bottles, cans and bottles and things. People were throwing stuff up there. And then a lot of people, of course, were waving and screaming my name, because I am pretty well known here after being on TV so much. And walking around the streets, people yell out my name, and the cops even were like saying, Max, Max. So this is a country that, because of YouTube and the fact that one of my appearances was translated into Greek and got over 500,000 views, which is a lot for a pretty small country, they know about the MaxKaiser.com site and about this radio show and about Resonance FM.
We should actually plug that the person who translated that was Oma Dion, omadeon.wordpress.com, and he really got your work translated here. But yeah, everywhere we went last night, it was pretty amazing. Everybody knew Max, all sorts of people. Even when we were walking in this park to go find a satellite truck that Russia Today was using for transmission, and it was in the middle of a very, very dark part, no lights in there. And we're walking around in the middle of the dark. So Max was on the phone yelling at the people arranging this that we were in the middle of a dark park and we don't know where we're going, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, in the a voice shouts out from the dark, Max Kaiser.
Yeah.
They recognize your voice.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if I'll go on that TV later today. I'll call up and find out. So the other big highlights here in Athens, in terms of what's happening, the Prime Minister George Papandreou was rumored. What, he reshuffled his cabinet, but he's not leaving, is he? He's staying.
No, he's not leaving. Remember, guess who else did this? Mubarak did this. Ben Ali did this in Tunisia. So Gaddafi tried this. The King of Jordan has done this. This is the classic thing that dictators do, is they attempt to reshuffle and appease the people.
Yeah, so that seems like it's going down the usual path, and then that doesn't usually last. We'll see how that goes. You know, last night's event with the Lawyers Guild was pretty interesting. I spoke as part of a panel, and the lawyers here are mounting some lawsuits against Goldman Sachs. They're trying to subpoena Lloyd Blankfein and some others, and
John Paulson
for treason. Also, they're accusing some folks, including the Prime Minister, of treason for getting involved in some derivative contracts and credit default swaps that put the interests of foreigners ahead of the country here, which is, you know, the very definition of treason, I guess you could say. And their objective is to make arrests, put people in prison, and to go after this legally. And these are some of the smartest legal minds in the country. And they had quite a big turnout last night. And they're really trying to mount a wall of litigation against the banksters.
Yeah, that was an impressive event, because out in the streets you had a lot of young people, lots and lots of tear gas. Even today, a day later, in the air, it feels like walking around Bangkok. You know how Bangkok has all the spices in the air? It's like you have little, like your skin is all prickly from the wind blowing up the chemicals. But last night, so all the young people are out here on the square, and at this event with all these lawyers, it was a rowdy crowd demanding arrests tonight, today, right away. And they were all, no, I didn't see anybody under 50 in there. There were people in their 70s and 80s, like, demanding the arrest. So when the former president of the parliament here spoke, and he was just trying to say, okay, we need to get rid of this government, but we need a political solution. And they were shouting him down, saying, no, we need to arrest them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And we know from history that when the middle classes and upper classes start to rebel against the status quo in the government, that's a real strong sign you're in the midst of a proper revolution. You know, speaking of tear gas, we learned some things about tear gas, kind of interesting. So one thing is, don't touch your face if there's tear gas in the air, because it makes it worse. I made that rookie mistake and really got some additional tear gas crying going on. Additional tears. And the other thing is, when you see people with white chalk on their face, this is Maalox or antacid powdering on their face, because I guess the antacid neutralizes the tear gas, Stacy?
Yes, apparently. But I had, that was definitely my first tear gas experience yesterday, and it hurts. It doesn't feel pleasant at all. But our friend, again, Dimitri, who has been to a few of these protests and seen tear gas at them, he had never seen so much. I mean, they literally just set off hundreds. Remember, it was like boom, 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 all over the place to drive everybody out of the square. And it worked. I mean, for a while. People left. And yep. And it was just these anarchists and provocateurs left, because they all had gas masks. So they were running around with gas masks,
yeah.
And everybody else was just driven away because it was so painful.
Yeah, and we heard the explosions of Molotov cocktails, and so now we know more about the Molotov cocktail, the history of that, which goes back to your country of historical antecedents.
Finland. Yes, that was during the Winter War from World War II. I think, you know, there's been 186 or maybe 86, many, many wars, battles between Russia and Finland over the years. And Finland only won one of those, and that was the Winter War. In the middle of World War II, there was major blizzards and cold up on the border. And we're moving right now. And what happened is the Finns won this one because they were the only crazy ones who could deal with the cold. But they invented the Molotov cocktail then, which was like I guess it's a kind of tear gas, really, for guerrilla fighting, because you just throw a cocktail bomb, a chemical cocktail bomb. It's like, but of course the Greek people are throwing Molotov cocktails, but they had one thrown at them first, and that's a financial Molotov cocktail.
Right. Well, just to follow up on that, so yeah, I guess it was General Molotov, was the Russian general that the name comes from.
Yeah.
The Finns were throwing these at him, and this was their only win against the Russians during that World War II period. Yeah. It's a classic, homemade projectile, explosive device that's come to us and through the last few decades. And we heard them blowing up yesterday from our hotel room, very impressive. And when a few of them come through successively, it sounds like, you're on the front line of a financial war, which is the premise of Hotspots Greece, isn't it?
Yes, it's a financial war. That's what I was saying when our hotel was under attack, and our friend outside was texting us saying, oh my God, you guys are being totally attacked. And he was ready to leave the square because he said it was so violent there. I was trying to film some of the stuff, but anytime you even peeped your head out, they would just throw stuff at you at very high velocity. So I looked over to Max and said, you heard all the windows smashing, so you were having to sit down on the ground behind the bed and stuff. And I was like, this is a financial war. This is it.
Yeah, when we started moving away from the windows, you realize this is, upgraded a little bit here. And when I went down to the lobby, that didn't give me any feeling of safety, you know, because they were barricading the doors, the staff was running around crazy, sweating. It looked like some were running away through the back door. But then I went up to the top floor, and again, you know, it was a completely different situation. There, people are just kind of hanging out, watching the revolution down below. But we were on the first floor of the hotel, so we were closer to the bottom, closer to, and, you know, as I said, we had the vantage point of we were within striking distance, and you just at some point when the explain exactly the role of the anarchists, you know, who they are. You know, these are people wearing the black hoods, right?
Yeah. Well, the thing I saw, and this is why we really started getting attacked, is I was out in the balcony and filming, and then I looked down and I saw these group of protesters surrounding a guy with a black ski mask on, and they were unhooding him, and it looked like he was a policeman. I think they found his ID, because all these undercover policemen carry identification that they are. And it looked like they were beating him or something. I was filming this, and there were also anarchists, however. So there were some policemen, some just black-clad kids. And so I was filming this. I was trying to get it closer, and I was having to lean over because they pulled the guy under the awning, and I was trying to film down there. And then like three guys looked up and saw me, and then they all started pointing to me. And then they they looked very angry and started hurling projectiles. And then I thought they were going to climb up over the balcony and come up there to get my camera. And I don't know if they were policemen who saw, who were upset that I had the footage, or anarchists who were upset that I had the footage, you know?
Right. So this was this is something that people don't have a lot of footage on. They don't have a lot of TV footage of anarchists with the black masks, who presumably are a mixture of anarchists and policemen, clubbing local citizens and injuring them. So you had this on tape,
yeah.
And then it became a tense moment there, because that tape then could be used in a court of law, couldn't it?
Well, yeah. Well, I don't know, but, you know, those guys, that their faces were, you couldn't see. You couldn't see a single thing. You could see a little bit of their eyes, and that's it. So I don't know if that could be used in a court of law, but I did upload a video where you saw, nobody else had that, where it was a bit further away, but I saw, I remember I was tweeting, like, that this is the very moment it all became violent, is there was a bunch of guys all in black, faces covered and gas masks on, and they, some normal looking guys, you know, just wearing t-shirts and jeans, turned to them, and they all started fighting. They were trying to, I don't know what was going on, but it looked to me like it was just Greeks saying, you know, trying to chase out the provocateurs. And they got into, and the provocateur guys had sticks with them. They all had sticks.
Yeah.
And you saw that fight clearly on the tape, and nobody else had that because, of course, we had that vantage point from above. And then the whole fight moved down the hill right underneath our hotel, and that's when they looked up and saw, and chased us out.
Yeah, so that's really the really dangerous element within the crowd. You know, once it gets going, then the work of the fake anarchists, you could call them. So the fake anarchists are really cops dressed up as anarchists, and then who are the real anarchists?
I think there's of course there's a real ones that come, and they dress in black, you know, and there are some of those real ones.
And so these are the people, like, who are just smashing windows and stuff, who are not trying to peacefully, as you see in all these protests, they're described as peaceful protests, and then they get violent because of the quote-unquote anarchists that are blamed. So then there are genuinely groups of, you know, typically young guys who like to dress up, and they come into these things and start smashing windows. But of course, that even anarchy has been co-opted by fake anarchy. Of course, we live in this world of fiat currencies and fake everything, fake food, fake politicians, fake anarchy. And the fake anarchists are policemen, and they're there to pretend like they're anarchists, and they cause violence because they want to have the peaceful elements driven out.
Yeah, and I thought the other interesting thing is, so here you look on the square, And, you know, Citibank is right there, and that's fine because they have very, very thick, heavy, corrugated metal, you know, protection that they pulled down last night. So nothing happened to them. Nothing happened to the Grand Breton Hotel because they also have that. Our hotel got smashed because they did leave one door open for guests.
Yeah.
And that, and it's really, really thick glass.
Yeah.
And unbelievably, I don't know how they use that so much force. If you could see how thick this glass is, and it smashed through, there's a big hole in it. They got that. But what stayed open the entire time on this square and was completely undamaged? Costa Coffee.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
That is so bizarre. If it were Starbucks, it would have been trashed, right?
Yeah. Well, revolutionaries need coffee. That's one thing we can be attest to for sure.
Well, I don't know. I can't explain it. It's certainly bizarre, but you would think if they were genuine, like, anti-globalization sort of kids busting up stuff, they would have gone after that because it's a global chain. But, you know, there were there were also youngsters. They were there all night long until I saw when I went to bed at, like, 1:32. They were still there.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you need coffee to keep the revolution going. So, because that's the only fuel, you know, tear gas and coffee. That's what makes a party, isn't it?
That's a good song. Somebody write that. Why doesn't that guy with the Indian head?
No, the Urban Indian.
Yeah.
Urban Indian. He's got a project on Pirate My Film, by the way. He's got a couple of projects.
I set you up for that.
Thank you, my sweet pea. And you've got your project called Hotspots Greece. I see that we've got $4,000 in share reservations for Hotspots Greece. That's good. And you've got two or three other films now. And the way it works is you reserve a share in one of our Hotspots projects. We go make the film. Really, you could call it deficit financing because we don't actually collect the money until the film is ready to be released, is the way we're doing it. That's the way we're working it. So this way our costs are met to make the film, and it gives us, and we make maybe a little money that we then use to put in motion the next film. So we can keep doing this, going from city, city, city around the world, doing hotspots, revolutionary filming, based on what the actions on piratemyfilm.com. Stacey Herbert.
I'm just looking over there because I see a big black sign with white letters written in French. And I was wondering what you can change the MPs to be to go to sleep. I can't see it. But the signs around here are really quite fascinating. They're quite graphic and interesting looking, all homemade. But I was actually, while you were talking, I was looking at that sign behind you, Rise Up, People of the World.
Yeah.
And now, Rise Up, People of the World, it sounds like a call to arms. But look at the little hearts. It looks all, like, flowery and gentle.
Well, you know, it's quite an interesting idea that the globe's peoples who are being imprisoned with fake debt. And I call it fake debt because it's not collateralized in any way. If you have debt, usually there's collateral behind the debt. But if you just create debt with no collateral, it's not really real debt, it's fake debt. And a country like Greece, they're being told that they owe $300-500 billion in debt. But this is debt that has no collateral, that was simply created in the laboratory of Wall Street as a means to bankrupt the country, to extract their assets for pennies on the dollar, so it's fake debt. And this fake debt, fiat debt, must be dealt with in this financial war by the people who, the only recourse the people have is to simply not pay the debt. They have to default and revolt. Default and regime change.
Well, Max, let's talk about that because this is something we've been covering on Greece, for example. And now the media has presented this as a case of, you know, that it's the French and German banks that own all the bad debt. And I've seen charts in like The Guardian and The Telegraph saying this is why Greece isn't allowed to default, because French and German banks will be undercapitalized. They'll take a huge hit, tens of billions of euros exposure to Greece. Now, certainly French and German banks do own the sovereign bonds of Greece, and they would those bonds are the ones that would be written down. But it's now emerged in the last few weeks, and this is a question we asked, is, well, these French and German banks have insurance, i.e. credit default swaps, on those debts in case of a default by Greece. And lo and behold, who wrote those credit default swaps for these banks?
The American banks.
So they would take the big hit.
That's right. The American banks would take the biggest hit. Which is, and guess which American companies were responsible for writing this fake insurance? Well, none other than AIG, which is, I think, going to surprise people that AIG is still in business, still committing fraud, because they were caught committing massive fraud during the Lehman scandal, which caused the collapse of 2008. You would have thought that they would have been shut down, or they would have been taken, having their license taken away, so that they couldn't create a new crisis, and yet that did not happen because of this gun to the head of what you can't allow the banks to take losses because that would cause a global meltdown.
But the fact, I believe Timothy Geithner now runs AIG. I think it's state-owned.
And and the point is that the banks, you know, they have to be, if you make a bad bet and you lose money, you can't be rewarded by the state. You can't be rewarded by the markets. You have to suffer the penalty of making a bad bet. This argument that, well, the banks will go bankrupt is a specious argument, because the banks have been bankrupt now for 20 years. They went bankrupt a long time ago. The only thing that keeps them open, they're peddling this fake debt, which is just causing huge economic problems all around the world. They need to be shut down. I mean, they're just like, there's a cancer. It's exactly as it's a financial cancer.
Well, you could say the U.S. Treasury, which owns AIG, is the equivalent of the Taliban, providing coverage for a terrorist, you know, providing safe haven for a terrorist. And the U.S. is now operating, they have these terrorist weapons, these credit default swaps, that are imprisoning and enslaving the population here. Now, this is how capitalism is supposed to work. Greece, France and Germany lent too much money to Greece. They should have looked closer and realized that they couldn't afford all the debt they were taking on. France and Germany obviously did have some concerns, which is why they bought insurance on all the debts they were accumulating. But so it's the U.S. who sold that insurance, however, and now they're the ones refusing to allow capitalism to operate. That is, for Greece to default, to hit the reset button and start again.
That's right. It's not capitalism, is it? It's state-protected, command and control, centralized, kind of Soviet-era Politburo, failed economic policies. And, you know, one of the reasons why this country is in such bad debt problem is because of the Olympics. You know, they took on huge amount of debt for the Olympics. And this is a recurring problem for countries around the world who take on the Olympics, who get selected by the International Olympic Committee to host the Olympics. Now, this is another huge scam. And they've been caught in huge bribing scandals. You know, Qatar supposedly won the right to host the Olympics, and now they realize that it was just simply bribery.
I think it was some sort of soccer, FIFA.
So that level of bribery and extortion needs to be shut down. You know, or have an Olympics for financial fraud. So you should have Goldman Sachs competing with HSBC, Barclays, JP Morgan in the Olympics of financial fraud. So you have different events like cooking the books, who can cook their books the most, accounting fraud, market manipulation, high frequency trading. You take all the events that make up our modern era of financial fraud and you hold an Olympics of financial fraud. I'd like to see who is the most, the Olympian, the champion. I would put my money on JP Morgan, but, you know, I may be missing something. Maybe it is AIG, now run by Timothy Geithner. Maybe they are the Olympic champion of financial fraud. But they should have a financial fraud Olympics to run parallel with the other Olympics, which has now become completely mired in financial fraud.
Oh, actually, the Olympics in Athens, weren't they the very first ones held almost, it was right after 9/11, so it was, you know, the fake war on terror that caused the low turnout because people were afraid to be at public events, people were afraid to fly, and there were all sorts of warnings in the press saying, oh, this event could be hit by terrorist attacks. And I remember the Greek government and the people behind the hosting the events here were just like they were angry, saying, no, there's no threat. No, there's no threat. Come here. Come to the events.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, the whole spirit of civilization, of humanity, of evolution has been snuffed out by a group of financial terrorists, because if the whole joy of life is taking risk, and sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. I mean, this is what life is all about. If you try to eliminate all risk of life because you're afraid of one millionth of 1% of the global population having nefarious thoughts on their mind, you're no longer alive. You just dig a six foot hole in the ground and throw yourself in. You're dead. You've died. You're no longer living. And this is, unfortunately, when I see it in my own country, the United States, people who are actively engaged in a live burial of themselves by trying to make themselves safe from life. That's what life is. Life has risks.
Yep, and again, we see that in every single arena. We certainly see that in the economy. Hopefully those police aren't coming into the square to throw some tear gas. Hopefully they just keep on going. Actually, it looks like an ambulance. So, honey, what do you think is going to happen today? Do you expect any sort of protest? I don't see any police around, so I think they always know when something's going to happen.
Right. It looks like it's back to business as usual. Yesterday's protest was, I think, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, in the history of Athens in terms of mobilizing people. The what's going on in the boardrooms and the banks hasn't changed. There's a little political reshuffling talked about, but nothing really substantive is happening. So the confrontation between the banksters and the people is just going to continue to heat up.
Well, I hear that it's generally during the day they don't have too many people out here because it's too hot, and then they start to come in around 7 or 8. And actually, we did receive a comment on our site last night where somebody, a Greek person, wrote saying, Max, I see from your video that you're at the Grand Breton Hotel. Which we are. But they said, why don't you come out tomorrow night into the square, because we hold a people's parliament every night from 9:45 until 11. Why don't you come speak?
Great. Sounds good. I'm there.
Yeah, I know you're going to be there. I think maybe we should do it from the balcony up there, maybe.
Evita style.
Yeah.
Don't cry for me, Residence FM.
Don't sing.
Oh, dear. Well, how much time left in this fabulous broadcast about?
We have about 15 minutes left.
Okay, so let's get into some of the real issues that we've been failing to dig into.
I hope we can take it, because my nose and my throat are starting to get a little bit sore, because there's every time the wind blows, and I think you can probably hear it blowing, like all the chemical, the dust that has settled on the ground from the tear gas, blows up into your nose, and it makes it all like burning sensation.
Yeah, well, all of my senses have been desensitized. I can't see or hear anything. I'm like Tommy. The blind deaf blip sure plays a mean pinball.
Right. I wish I could read some of these signs, other than the one written in English, Rise Up People of the World.
Yeah.
And then the one that has a swear word that I'm not allowed to say. International Mother F's. So for the IMF.
Right.
That's one. But other than that, all this is, it's all Greek to me. Bah, 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 bum, bum.
Oh, boy. Well, that is the first time I've heard that on this trip. I guess it took 2 days. I had three of that funny expression joke.
Hey, some of the comments on our site said it's all Greek to me.
I didn't bother reading the comments because I knew that all of these people would be writing that over and over again. Like, it's the first time in 5,000 years that joke hasn't been written. So, Dominic Strauss-Kahn. So, interesting scuttlebutt there. The what's his name, that lawyer who defended O.J. Simpson?
Dershowitz.
Dershowitz. He wrote a blog saying that, well, what's going on now, speaking of the IMF, is that they're waiting, you know, to settle. The defense can't outright make an offer to the plaintiffs of a cash settlement. They have to wait for the plaintiffs to come back and suggest the settlement price. But he's thinking that this is what's going to happen. He's thought between $1 and $3 million to the victim of Strauss-Kahn's actions, and then he'll be back on the street, ready to all charged up and raring to go. So,
yeah, Alan Dershowitz interpreted for the audience what was going on. So they read the defense statement, then they would read the prosecutor's statement, and see, like, when the prosecutor says, blah, 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 this is a serious crime he's been convicted of, we have overwhelming evidence, that is them saying, we'll take $3 million. Then the defense responded and said, we are collecting our own evidence, and I think people will be shocked to learn about this woman. That was them saying, counter offering, we'll give her $1 million.
Yeah.
And so this is basically what they're doing. And he said the reason is that it will take many years for a criminal case to get through, and there's no guarantee that he'll be found guilty. And then once he's found guilty, or even if he's not, then she could go to civil court, which there's a lower, you just have to have, it's not just the way it's found guilty, there's a lower barrier, there's a lower threshold. But that can take a long time as well, and then it's almost impossible to collect the money once the court judgment comes down, because he could either, Dominic Strauss-Kahn could either declare bankruptcy or could have transferred his money to his wife. So, for example, O.J. Simpson case, when Nicole Brown's family received a judgment of $10 million in civil action, and they never collected because he just said he didn't have the money.
Yeah. Well, it's also a subtle form of slander as well from Alan Dershowitz, because he's of course making this whittling the case down to simply money, and failing to make, you know, discuss the fact that this poor woman was brutally assaulted by this International Monetary Fund director, and in so doing kind of belittling her charge. So it's a subtle form of slander. Of course, we would expect nothing less from Alan Dershowitz.
Yeah, but look, we just covered the story on Kaiser Report where this guy ran, is a wealthy guy, Chicago guy, who was on vacation down in Florida, was driving his $150,000 car, drove it too fast, out of control, and ran over two British tourists in Miami, killing them both. Then he fled the scene, outran the police, attacked the police. It was a clear case of this guy doing something. He paid off the victims' families and then didn't face any jail time at all. The prosecutors wanted him to get 15 or 20 years, and he bought his way out of it. It was an undisclosed sum they gave the victims' families. But this is the way justice works in neo-feudal times.
I blame Parker Brothers.
Who?
Parker Brothers.
The game manufacturers?
Yes. They created the game Monopoly, or they distributed the game Monopoly. And in that game is the get-out-of-jail-free card. And so many people grew up playing Monopoly and coveting the get-out-of-jail-free card. I think when they became adults, they believed that there was such a thing. And for many people, there is such a thing. For if you have a certain amount of cash, you can acquire a get-out-of-jail-free card, and gives you the right to commit crimes with impunity.
I just saw a poor little bird there with his string wrapped around both of his feet, so he couldn't move his feet around.
He just came out of Little Birdie Guantanamo. He's an escaped Guantanamo birdie victim.
Well, somebody's going to have to cut that. They're going to have to help him. I helped a bird once. It was big like that. It was it flew into our apartment.
Big bird from Sesame Street?
Yeah, it was like a pigeon. And it flew into our apartment, and it went absolutely ballistic. It went flew all over the kitchen, slamming into the cupboards.
Yeah.
And I was waiting for it to try to calm down because it was too scary to get near it. And finally, it just collapsed on the ground and just like was breathing really heavily. And I went and I put a little towel over it and picked it up and put it, threw it out the window, and it flew away.
There's a shrine to you in Pigeon Heaven.
I don't think he went to Pigeon Heaven. I think it's just the pigeons in the park. Every time I walk by, they would.
You think he's still alive 20 years later? That's a, quite an aged pigeon.
20 years later, it was last year in Paris.
Oh, that's right. I remember that day. There was pigeons everywhere.
Yes.
I noticed that if I whisper curses on TV, RT doesn't cut them. That's interesting, isn't it? So apparently they don't edit you if you whisper the foul language.
Maybe they didn't hear you.
Okay? Maybe not,
maybe you're going to get yourself in trouble now with Ofcom.
Ofcom? Off with their head com?
Okay, so we have like 10 more minutes left. What do you want to talk about here in these last 10 minutes? It's getting a little bit livelier, as you could hear. The music is down, but more people are out. It's normal Greek people, workers.
That's some abnormal ones.
Tourists. Yeah, there's some abnormal ones, but that's normal. These are...
Well, then how do you know which are abnormal if they're all normal, including the abnormal?
It's all normal. That's
right. So how can you say somebody's abnormal if it's all normal?
Well, we're all abnormally normal.
Okay. Well, then that's the explanation then, isn't it?
Well, somebody's going to have to rescue that bird.
I see you eyeing that bird.
Yeah.
And you're stressed out by the bird's stress.
But I don't have any scissors with me, because you're not allowed to bring anything on planes anymore. That's
Oh, sucks. I got raped on the at the airport.
Yeah, she took your stuff. What did she take? So that woman took... It's so stupid. I'm really sick of this.
Well, she took my mouthwash. I had a half a bottle of mouthwash. And she...
I thought that was a TSA-approved one.
Yeah, and she offered me the opportunity to drink it before she confiscated it.
No, she didn't.
Yeah, she said, do you want to drink this? So that now, before I throw it away? I thought that was an odd request. And she seemed drunk, you know, herself, like she was going to drink it.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure that was a TSA-approved bottle. But, you know, also manufacturers of these goods have not caught on. Everything is over 100 milliliters. Everything's like 125, but you're only allowed to bring on 100, well, under 100.
Yeah, plus the guy patting me down, he offered to fillet me, which I thought was very...
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did. He followed me into the men's room. You didn't see that. He followed me into the men's room, and he propositioned me after rubbing his hands on my nipples. And I thought that was a bit over the top.
Will you shut up? You've gone. There's too much sun out here. You're going a little bit crazy.
Well, this is what they're into in the airport these days. You know, the airports, the bus stations, you'd find guys in the men's room committing lewd sexual acts. Now they've got jobs patting people down in the front of the airport. You know, George Michael, who was caught in the park having sex with another man.
No, he wasn't.
That man who he was having sex with is now working at the airport.
No, Max, he did not get caught having sex with another man. He was at the park, Will Rogers Park in Los Angeles, and he propositioned a guy in the bathroom. The guy happened to be an undercover policeman waiting for a man to proposition him.
The Republicans who go to the men's rooms and the rest areas on highways and stick their boinky boinks through a hole in the wall called Pleasure Hole are now working at the airport. The Tea Party works at the airport now.
That's what happened to that, who is that, Craig, the former congressman who went to an airport. He also tried to proposition somebody in the airport bathroom, and it turned out it was an undercover policeman waiting for somebody to do that.
That's right. So the guys who have been capped, the Republican types who are caught propositioning other boys and men at the airports, their response was not to outlaw lewd sexual behavior, but to legitimize it by giving them jobs committing lewd sexual behavior in the airport. It's just like on Wall Street. You get caught committing a crime, and they legalize the crime. Okay, Goldman Sachs was caught breaking the law. They offered Facebook insider stock to more than 500 clients. That's a law-breaking situation. They broke the law. So what was the response? They got the SEC to change the law. Now here you have Republicans caught in the airport propositioning boys to have sex with them in the restroom. What's their response? To make that legal, give them jobs. in the airport patting people down and offering fellatio as you go through the airport.
What is wrong? Why can't you just go? What, like, why does that happen in the bed? That doesn't ever happen in the women's room. Like, you never have a woman, like, trying to tap your toe under the stall and trying to get you to come over and see her in the next stall. That never happens.
But women are more evolved. Women came later. They're a more evolved species. Men are stuck in the pre-ages. They're still...
Women came later? What do you mean? Like, there was
women
just men walking
later.
Around for
there
years?
There was just men.
How then, did you reproduce?
Through greeting cards.
Spontaneous combustion.
Spontaneous ejaculatory reproductive warrants sold by J.P. Morgan.
I see.
I thought of a name for simple cell reproduction. Yeah, remember, I came up with an interesting for Dominic Strauss-Kahn. You know, IMF was going to create some new class of securities called securitized something mortgage entertainment notes. It was S-E-M-E-N or semen.
Okay.
Semen
notes. We all saw that. That was funny.
Yeah.
That was a Max Kaiser. My face is like swollen.
It's killing me, I'll tell you.
Well, it's all Greek to me.
Does your face hurt?
I'm gonna say
it's killing
that, like,
me.
I'm going to say that at least 20 times today. Just to...
Over and over again?
Yeah. But, so let's kind of wrap this up.
Why?
Because
why?
we have to go have lunch. We have to make another little video.
How much time we have left on this?
We have less than 1 minute now.
Oh, less than a minute.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it got me all hot and bothered, I'll say that.
What? Dominic Strauss-Kahn's semen bonds?
The semen bonds, you know, that's what was used to generate life on planet Earth 20 million years ago, and from that came man, and then later woman came along, and it's a more evolved species. So women, because they're more evolved, they don't want to stick their pokey pokes through a hole in the wall in the restroom by the side of the highway trying to get a dog or a cat or a horse or some other guy to lick it.
Okay, well, with that, I think it's time to say
bye, y'all.